Welcome to Spotlight on Science at the Smithsonian, a bi-weekly podcast from the Smithsonian Institution. I am David Evans, Undersecretary for Science here at the Smithsonian. This is Volume 5, Number 4, released on February 23, 2007. In this installment of Spotlight on Science, we learn how Smithsonian astronomers have measured the speed of dwarf galaxies orbiting the Milky Way, and what this tells us about the mysterious dark matter that pervades the galaxy. Closer to home, we learn the connections between jellyfish and oysters in Chesapeake Bay. Swimmers may hate stinging sea nettles, but they play an important role in the bay's food web. Finally, we take a look at carbon dioxide, melting glaciers, and ecological upheaval 300 million years ago. What can the deep past tell us about our own future? Orbiting galaxies provide clues to the Milky Way's dark halo. One of the most momentous astronomical discoveries of recent decades is that of a halo of so-called dark matter surrounding our galaxy, the Milky Way. As befits its name, dark matter cannot be seen by astronomers, but its presence can be inferred from its gravitational effects on normal visible matter. The dark halo lies outside the main body of the galaxy, but two dwarf galaxies orbiting the Milky Way, known as the Magellanic Clouds, are in the right place to give key information on the shape and extent of the dark halo. Two Smithsonian astronomers, Nitya Kalaballo and Charles Alcock, have recently found that the clouds are hurling through space in orbits at speeds nearly twice as high as previously thought. To calculate orbits of the Magellanic Clouds, the researchers needed to know three-dimensional trajectory of their motion through space. The rate at which they're traveling away from the Earth, known as their radial velocity, was already well established by previous studies. What remained to be determined was the rate at which they move across the sky, known as their proper motion. This measurement is difficult because it requires extremely precise measurements of the positions of the clouds against a fixed background over several years. Previous attempts had used measurements spaced more than a decade apart, but lacked the precision necessary for accurate results. Instruments aboard the Hubble Space Telescope are precise enough, however, that the researchers were able to make measurements separated by only 2 years and get the results that are the most accurate so far. The high speed of the clouds can mean one of two things. Either they are not gravitationally bound to our galaxy, or each other for that matter, and will eventually break free from their orbits, or that mass of dark halo is significantly greater than previously assumed, because it would require a stronger pull of gravity to permanently hold the clouds in such a fast-moving orbit. Either way, this finding significantly changes our picture of how our galaxy and its neighbors are evolving. Oysters, jellyfish, and the Chesapeake food web. Overfishing is a major problem in many aquatic ecosystems, and it's becoming increasingly clear to scientists that its effects can be complex. Two ecologists at the Smithsonian Environmental Research Center, Denise Breitberg and Richard Fulford, have found that the drop in oyster numbers from disease and overfishing in the Chesapeake Bay has led to a decline in stinging jellyfish known as sea nettles. Because sea nettles are major predators of other gelatinous animals known as ctenophores, the decline in sea nettles has led to a population boom of ctenophores. And because ctenophores are voracious predators of zooplankton, including oyster and fish larvae, the chain effects of the decline of oysters in the bay may have dramatic effects on the structure of the food web, and it could likely hamper efforts to restore oyster populations. Oysters are not only key members of the food web in many estuaries, but by building reefs, they provide habitat for many other species. Sea nettles spend their adult lives swimming through the water in search of ctenophores and other prey. But they spend an earlier stage of their life cycle on the bottom, attached to hard surfaces, such as oyster shells. With fewer available oyster reefs in recent years, fewer sea nettles have survived to adulthood, and their numbers have declined. Because the sea nettles help control predators of oyster larvae, such as ctenophores, the loss of sea nettles may lead to a further decline in oysters, or at least make it difficult for oyster populations to rebound. This in itself has important implications for the ecology and economics of the Chesapeake. But there are also implications for the bay's fish populations. Not only do fast-reproducing tenophores prey on fish larvae, but they also compete for food with many adult fish, such as the bay anchovy. Despite the decline of sea nettles, the overall effect of the loss of oyster reefs may be to tip the ecological balance in the Chesapeake food web away from fish and towards gelatinous predators. Ancient global warming led to ecological instability. Carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere are higher today than at any time in the past 650,000 years and will continue to rise this century. To understand the climatic and ecological consequences of this, we must look into the geologic past. The late Paleozoic Ice Age was the longest period of glaciation in the last half billion years of Earth history. It waned over a time span of 40 million years during the late Carboniferous and Permian periods of geologic time. A research team, including Smithsonian paleobotanist William DeMichel, has found that the warming was driven by a rise in atmospheric carbon dioxide similar to that occurring today. The changes resulted in severe climatic fluctuations and triggered marked changes in tropical plant communities. The research team, led by Isabel Montaez of the University of California, Davis, used a procedure called stable isotope analysis to estimate atmospheric carbon dioxide and surface temperatures during the Carboniferous and Permian time periods. Earlier work has shown that the ratio of carbon isotopes in soil minerals and buried organic matter is linked to the concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. The researchers collected closely spaced samples of mineral nodules and plant fossils from the Carboniferous and Permian strata of the southwestern United States where these layers are exposed. To estimate global temperatures, they analyzed the oxygen isotopes in fossil calcite shells in nearby shallow marine sedimentary deposits. The ratio of oxygen isotopes in marine shells is a well-established method of establishing paleotemperatures. Because the biological process of shell secretion is sensitive to temperature, shells formed under different climates have different isotopic ratios. The results suggest that carbon dioxide in the atmosphere during the Permian deglaciation went from levels of approximately the same as today, 280 parts per million, to as high as 3,500 parts per million. The increase was not a smooth rise, but a series of peaks and valleys which matched fluctuations in inferred temperatures. With each fluctuation, the fossil plant communities were also changed. Ferns and other plants adapted to the ever-moist conditions of tropical Carboniferous coal swamps were abruptly replaced by conifers and other plants typical of seasonal and semi-arid climates. What is especially significant is that, unlike the earlier rhythmic climate fluctuations seen during the Ice Age itself, the fluctuations during the deglaciation appear to have produced highly variable conditions and vegetation types. The implied climatic and ecologic instability suggests that the consequences of rising carbon dioxide may not only be severe, but also extremely difficult to predict.
That's all for this issue of Spotlight on Science at the Smithsonian. If you haven't already subscribed to the Spotlight podcast, visit spotlight.si.edu to learn how. You can also download archived editions of Spotlight. As always, feel free to share your thoughts with the Spotlight team at spotlight@si.edu.